Comlink to her sisters.
Be ready for them when they charge. We don't have time to play now. We must finish the job quickly.
As the men rushed forward, the sisters stepped through the shimmering curtain to meet them. The job in question was hand-to-hand, because the EM shields of both sides' battlesuits rendered lasers useless, even at close quarters. The men were no match for the officers, in either physical strength or in stamina. The disease the invaders had brought with them had affected all of them more or less equally. If the sisters were weakened, so were the men. It didn't matter that the troopers outnumbered their superiors more than 2-1. Greta joined her sisters in the fight. She couldn't have stopped herself, even if she'd wanted to. Through the cleared visors of their helmets, Greta could see the rage on the faces of the two troopers who attacked her, the rage and bloodlust. They wanted more than a free ride, more than merely to save their lives. They wanted to reassert their masculinity.
How sad.
She short-clenched the first, ending the blow with a savage twist of the wrist. His armor breastplate buckled inward. Her fist had shattered his sternum, and the sharp ends of imploding bone had torn his heart to shreds. The second trooper wheeled around the body of the first, trying to come at her from the side. Greta let him come, offering him an undefended right hip. The trooper swung a kick into the small of her back. It had taken everything he could put behind it. She absorbed the blow easily, letting it drive her a half step forward. Then she shifted her weight and kicked. Her heel came down in a slashing arc against the side of his helmet. The helmet cracked in a circle of spider-shattered plastisteel. The shock of the impact killed the man like a sledgehammer to the side of his head. Greta took a moment to look around the field of battle. The sisters were acquitting themselves splendidly. Jan held a trooper overhead, a hand on his suit collar and a hand on his crotch, then dropped his back onto her upraised knee. His battlesuit didn't protect him. His spine cracked right in half. Other sisters pounded their opponents into the beige dust, snapped their arm and leg bones, and then finished them off with elbow strikes to the heart. Only Miro seemed to be having trouble. Three troopers surrounded her, and although they couldn't bring her down, Miro couldn't defeat any of them either. It was the disease. Poor Miro had a more advanced stage. One of the troopers turned away from the three-on-one attack in time to glimpse the battle-suited figure bearing down on him. He didn't have time to get out of the way, or to avoid the hands that gripped his helmet. Greta used both arms and the power in her legs to crank him off his feet, sending him spiraling sideways across the compound. His windmill flight ended at the feet of two other sisters, who immediately took charge of him. Greta stomped the nearest trooper's kneecap, and despite the overlapping plates of his battlesuit, the knee crunched and bent inward in a way it was never intended to bend. The trooper fell. Greta fell upon him, launching a snap kick to the middle of his visor. The helmet cracked like an eggshell bumped by the back of a spoon. Gore spewed over the inside of the visor, but not before she got a good look at the dead man's face. One eye stared up, the other stared toward the flattened ruin of his nose. Miro caught hold of the last trooper, and as they tussled face to face, knocked him down with a leg sweep. Before he could roll away from her, she jumped in the air and came down on her right knee, which landed in the middle of his chest. The battlesuit torso plates buckled, and her knee drove deep into his chest cavity, taking with it the splintered remains of his sternum and ribcage. The trooper struggled for a moment more, then became still. Greta reached out a hand and helped Miro up. The compound had one-third as many standing figures as it had a few seconds before. All but one of them were sisters. Dr. Hoth, also in a battle suit, hurriedly crossed the open space as Greta and the others moved back into the trans-reality field. He pushed a tall silver cylinder on wheels before him. Of all the males, Dr. Hoth was the only one of any use to them, the only one worth the fuel to bring along. Hoth wheeled the tank through the shimmering curtain and set it down beside Greta, who stood at the head of the line of sisters. As the field built in power, a whirlwind whipped the dirt inside the marker stakes, and the air was choked with a nauseating petrochemical stench. The lips of reality appeared, a seam in space and time that gaped around them like a giant, hungry mouth. Greta took a last look around.
There was so much I could have done here.
A fraction of a second before their departure, through the swirling eddies of space-time, Greta saw Ryan Cotter emerge from the big dome. He wore a battlesuit without a helmet, and next to him was his red-haired lover. Her last image of this reality was his fierce and confident smile. Shadow Man thought he had won, but the silver cylinder by her side held Ryan's potent seed. Ryan, Christie, and JB climbed up from the Slake City encampment, up the long grade to the end of the road's first rise. Though they had defeated the enemy, driven them from their world, this was a journey of dread. Not only because they were once again forced to venture into the new glass sea, because they didn't know which, if any, of their loved ones they'd find alive at their journey's end. They might walk all the way to Ground Zero just to dig a mass grave. When they reached the top of the rise, the dread vanished. They saw a row of figures climbing toward them, out of the nuke's crater. Recognizing his father, Dean broke away from the file and ran up the hill. Tossing down his laser rifle, the boy threw his arms around Ryan and hugged him hard. Ryan mussed his son's hair.
It's okay, son. Everything's okay now.
Hey, boy, where the hell's my hat?
Here you go, JB.
Ah, much better.
When the rest of the former slaves came close enough for Ryan to do a head count, his expression of joy faded. Mildred, Jack, and Doc joined them.
This is all that's left?
All that survived the trip from Ground Zero. There's just the eight of us. We got hit hard, but we returned the favor. None of the troopers they sent out are ever coming back.
We heard a big bang.
That was the Sheehees saying bye-bye. They cranked up their trans-reality gear and disappeared into thin air. They left a lot of dead troopers behind, though.
Will they be back?
Let's hope not, Dean.
It appears the androgens have abandoned their domes as well. Perhaps in their haste, they left some food behind. I am quite ravenous.
There's food down there, all right. But I guarantee you won't want to eat most of it. Strangest red, blasted mixtures you ever saw. The stuff needs to be buried in a deep hole.
The companions and the four former slaves started down the slope to the encampment.
Somebody coming.
Jack pointed at a dust cloud whirling its way across the plain, over the rough track in the direction of the Slake City compound. They watched it approach in silence for a moment. As the vehicle drew closer, through the haze of swirling dust it raised, they could make out the gaudy neon colors of the magic bus.
I'll bet the bastard's got himself another load of doped-up slaves for Ground Zero.
I guess this means we're not quite done here yet.
That bastard's in for a big surprise when he pulls up and finds the bitches long gone and us in their place.
I foresee a most delightful and well-deserved welcoming party. If you will excuse my rudeness, dear friends, I must hurry ahead to the camp. I need to locate my sword stick. I intend to put it to excellent use momentarily.
Keep listening for a special preview after these announcements. Beneath the brutal sun of the nuke-ravaged Southwest, the Texas desert burns red-hot and merciless, commanding agony and untold riches to those greedy and mad enough to mine the slick black crude that lies beneath the scorched earth. When a gateway jump puts Ryan and the others deep in the hell of Texas, they have no choice but to work for a rogue baron in order to win their freedom. If they fail, they face death. Deathlands 58, Salvation Road. Deathlands Breakthrough is a Cutting Audio production. Copyright 2005, The Cutting Corporation. Performed by Richard Rowan with Colleen Delaney, Nanette Savard, Terrence Hazelford, Kate Torrey, Christopher Graybill, Christopher Walker, and Thomas Penny. Directed by Rick Rowan. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Vocal dialogue editing by Dan Smith. Sound design by Dan Smith and Brian Patton. Script adapted for graphic audio by Bill Campbell. The Deathlands theme was composed by Mark Ashby.